and welcome into another edition of the B Squared Podcast. And today is May 31st, 2016, as we record. I'm Jordan Bernfield. He's Brian Beto. We're glad to have you along. The Cubs had another really strong week. They took 2 out of 3 in St. Louis, and then they came home to sweep the Phillies, and then they won yesterday against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And as we record, we're about a half an hour from another Jake Day, which means it's very good in Cubland. They are 35-14 on the season. They've won 6 in a row and 7 of 10, and they are still the best team in baseball by quite a wide margin. Beto, you and I were talking about it last week. I think you had them going 7-0 last week.
One game, Randall Grichuk really, really just put
a
wrench in
my
prediction.
He did. And otherwise, you were spot on. I had them winning both series, which they did, but I didn't have them sweeping the Phillies. This past week, the Cubs really got back to what they were doing prior to that little hiccup where they lost 8 out of 12. I think it's more than anything else, it's really that just that they were not going to play 800 ball all year. You're going to lose some games where you don't hit. And we talked about it last week, but this past week, the pitching, again, phenomenal, and the bats broke out again.
Yeah, and first of all, I do want to wish you a very happy Jake Day.
And to you as well.
Secondly, and by the way, Jake Day, I love it when it's on like a Monday or Tuesday, because Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're great as days in general, but then you add Jake Day earlier on in the week, and it makes a day like Monday, especially a Tuesday after a holiday weekend, much more tolerable. So I need to get that out there, first of all.
Can I say, though, that a Friday night Jake Day is the worst? Like when he had that start in San Francisco?
San Fran.
Yeah, because we went out for dinner, and it's difficult to schedule a Friday evening around Jake. As much as I love Jake and watching
exactly.
him pitch, it's like, oh, I got to stay in and watch Jake, or I got to go somewhere to watch Jake. I'd rather if the Cubs could just help us all out and have him pitch either the Friday afternoon game or a weekday or you know, a weeknight game, that would be best for all
yeah.
of us.
Like tonight. Yeah. Perfect. I don't know when we're going to actually post this, but tonight's perfect. It's Tuesday night after the holiday weekend. You're kind of bummed out because Memorial Day weekend was over. We had a storm roll through. It's like the weather's not even good anymore right now. But we're all saved because it's Jake Day. And that means a lot to me. So I'll say that. Secondly, yes, the Cubs are good again. They were not good for maybe a week or so, a week or two. And they're good again, as evident by their most recent play. And it just, you know how they say regressing to the mean? It's
yeah.
like progressing to the mean, I feel like, when this team plays well. So
right.
this is the true version of what we've seen in the last few days. Yeah, we know the Phillies were to come back down to earth and maybe not as good as their record would indicate. The starting pitching's been outstanding again, like it has all season long. The bats are starting to come around a little bit. Ben Zobrist is still insanely hot. We've seen some better swings from Anthony Rizzo as of late, which is huge.
Yep.
Jason Hayward's looked a little bit better than before, and it's just a well-rounded effort. The bullpen in the game yesterday going 7 perfect innings was almost unheard of. And I think it was like 100 years since we've seen a performance like that out of a bullpen.
Right.
And large in part due to Travis Wood, 4 perfect innings that allowed, and JD said it on the broadcast yesterday about Travis Wood's 4 innings. You know, it seems like an unconventional day because it was a 7-inning bullpen day, but he almost made it into a conventional day for Joe Maddon to use his bullpen because he used Wood through 4. So that's like the starter got the 6 innings, and then he went up with his normal rotation and then finished off with Strope and Rondon. So it wasn't that far out of the norm, but it's fun to see this team come back after a struggle here and there and win. They're at 35 wins already. Even if they lose tonight, they'll be finishing the first 2 months of the season with only 15 losses, which is just absurd.
It's incredible, and I agree with a lot of the things you said. I think everything you said, really. I mean, Jason Hayward, to me, is starting to look comfortable at the plate. I know that yesterday he didn't make great contact. As we record on Tuesday the 31st on the Memorial Day game, he did have a hit and an RBI and a run scored, but even the hit was sort of an infield dinker right in front of the plate.
He was due. But he's had some shots at people.
Right, but I felt like watching the game, I think in particular Friday, Beto, the first game against the Phillies, Hayward had a couple of hits in his first 2 at-bats, and it just started to look like he was more comfortable at the plate. His feet weren't moving as much, and he was driving the ball. He had that line drive double to left center field. You were starting to see the lights start to turn on for him. I think that there's been a lot of moving parts in his swing that have to be worked out for the Cubs, because let's face it, if this guy's going to be here for another 7 years, he's going to have to be a way more productive hitter than he's been. But I think that he's looked better. Rizzo's looking better. Of all the guys that could slump, I'm really not concerned about Anthony Rizzo. I don't even know what you attribute the 3-for-39 slump he was in or whatever it is. I think it's weird that it happened. I think teams have adjusted to where he hits the ball, and he's been hurt by defensive shifts and things like that.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
But, you know, he's starting to hit the ball better. I'm not really worried. And, I mean, you mentioned the game on Memorial Day, 7 perfect innings from this bullpen. We've always talked about how, well, if there's really a weakness on this team, it might be the bullpen. Well, the bullpen was sensational. How about Kyle Hendricks on Saturday throwing a complete game, which should have been a shutout, except for that, you know, boneheaded play in the outfield. I mean, there's really nothing to criticize right now about the Cubs, unless you want to just say that certain individuals are not hitting at the same time as other individuals. It's been that good. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's tough to pick out something, which is a great problem to have. And I think last week we're down on Jorge Soler a little bit, and he has even answered the bell, and he's starting to really hit. And I've seen some, you know, graphs of Soler and his line drive percentage as plate appearances wane on throughout the course of a season, and he just gets better every single year. I know it's a limited sample size and just, you know, three seasons. However, it's the trend is continuing for him. He's starting to look much better at the plate. He's hit some balls much, much harder recently. He's taking some pitches that he was swinging at early on in April. And that's huge for this team. And Madden has stuck with him. And that's good. I know at times it was frustrating because we're like, is it better just to play Brian in left and have LaStella and Baez platoon over at third base? And ever since, Soler has really started to play really well. And he's still obviously extremely young. And that's been a lot of fun, too, because if he's hitting, it just adds another element to the lineup in that sixth spot or so that was missing over the last few weeks when they weren't playing well. So hopefully we'll see if that continues.
Yeah, I mean, Jorge Soler over the last 10 games has had, you know, 3 home runs. He's had a few multi-hit games. He's starting to look like, you know, a viable hitter at the plate. I still think that the body language on Jorge Soler leaves a lot to be desired sometimes. I'm never a guy really that
you going Jay Cutler on me.
Well, no, but the funny thing is, you know me. You know that I'm not a guy that generally criticizes body language, like, ever. But you notice how when he takes a strike, he like looks up at the heavens, like, I can't believe they called that strike on me. Or, you know, he like shrugs his shoulders down. Like, it doesn't. To me, his body language doesn't exude that of a confident hitter the way it did when he came up to the major leagues. But over the last 7 days, he's hitting .333 with a .500 on base, and his OPS is at .133. So it's clear that he is starting to see the light bulb come on for him. I'll say this too. If he gets hot, like you said, and boy, what a shot in the arm it is, because of all the great things that we've seen with this Cubs team this year, the one area in which there have been ups and downs is the outfield. Other than Dexter Fowler,
right?
Jason Hayward really hasn't done anything offensively yet this year. I know he's starting to sort of hit, but he really hasn't done much. And Soler has been mostly not good, except for the last, you know, 7 to 10 days. So if Soler could get hot, if Jason Hayward could finally hit like the guy that they paid $184 million to, I mean, how much better could they be is sort of the funny joke in this, but they would be better. You know, if they were getting better performance from their 2-corner outfielders, which they haven't really gotten from an offensive standpoint. But I want to ask you about the pitching, and particularly Chris Bosio. And I know that in Chicago in particular, when the media discusses pitching in this city, we often talk about Don Cooper on the south side of town with the White Sox. And boy, has he done a great job over his tenure with the Sox. And you can think of a lot of different starting pitchers and relievers that Cooper has made better, I think, from working with him and trying to find what works for them and maximizing their abilities. But Chris Bosio may be the best pitching coach in the game that nobody talks about. And he's got to be one of the top 5 in the game. When you consider this starting rotation going into the year, We knew that they were going to be a good pitching staff. I think we knew that John Lackey was going to lengthen the rotation. And after a rocky start to the year, Lackey's been great lately. But Jason Hammel, we really didn't know, right, after the way that he finished last year. And Kyle Hendricks, you know I love him because I see my high school pitching career in Kyle Hendricks. But, you know, on a serious note, the guy has pitched really, really well. And he has learned to maximize what he can do with obviously limited stuff. And it's a joy to watch these guys go out there and pitch because apart from Hamill leaving in the second inning with a hamstring injury and Lester leaving that start in San Francisco where he got bombed, you can basically write in six innings for every Cubs starting pitcher. It is unbelievable that they have been that consistent.
I've talked about Cubs pitching coaches throughout my lifetime, and there's been some bad ones, clearly. There has been some good ones. I used to think Larry Rothschild took a lot of garbage, and it was unprecedented. I'm sure there's certain things he could have done better in years where he was better than others. However, you mentioned something earlier that this is the reason why I think they took too much garbage, is that you look at the two teams that are usually talked about in the city other than the Cubs. It's the baseball teams. It's the White Sox, clearly, and then the Cubs' rivals, the St. Louis Cardinals. Don Cooper and Dave Duncan were regarded as maybe the two best pitching coaches in all of baseball. So when you look at those guys, and you're like, oh my gosh, why don't the Cubs have someone like that? When the other 28 teams didn't have anyone near the success that guys like Cooper and Dave Duncan did for the most part. You can throw maybe Leo Mazzoni in there, but he also had three Hall of Famers in his rotation with the Braves. And I think that there's Cubs pitchers that have, pitching coaches that have been underappreciated to an extent. However, I think you're starting to finally see that sort of level of appreciation with the Chris Bosio, because the buy-in from Cubs pitching pitchers, and a lot of that's, you know, Madden as well, like guys like Hendricks, who's just so good at optimizing the best version of himself, and Lackey and Hamill, and getting these guys to think a little bit differently. And obviously Jake Arrieta, the ultimate reclamation project.
Right, right. He turned Jake Arrieta from a failed prospect who was traded for basically nothing, right? I mean, the Orioles were in a pennant race at the time and wanted Scott Feldman, okay? They wanted Scott Feldman, which is laughable now, but Chris Bosio turned Jake Arrieta from a guy that was able to be acquired for Scott Feldman and your favorite player of all time, Stevie Clevenger.
Love Stevie Ballgame.
Right, into the best pitcher in baseball over the last year and a half.
He's so insane.
It's incredible. I mean, I don't always know. There's always people that are going to say, well, how much do you give credit to the coach and how much do you give credit to the players? But when there are so many examples of guys that they have turned around, and I'll even give you this point further, Beto, that the one area that you might be able to pick holes in for Theo and Jed since they took over the Cubs, and you know I'm a huge fan of theirs. I think they've done brilliant work in turning around the Cubs and making them what they are. The one area where you could sort of nitpick is that they really haven't developed a bona fide pitcher at all, right? I mean, Hector Rondon, I mean, maybe you could talk about some of the relievers that they brought through the system, but we're not talking about anyone that they've drafted and developed early in terms of a pitcher that they brought to the big leagues that has done anything, right? They haven't done that yet, and a lot of their early round pitching draft picks are either not in the majors or they're having varied levels of successes in the minor leagues. But what they have done is they have employed Chris Bosio through the Dale Swaim era all the way through Renteria and now Madden, and they have allowed him to work with the pitching that they have pieced together, whether it was through trades or through free agent signings. And they've turned this pitching staff into the best in the game. And they've allowed the fewest runs in baseball by a pretty wide margin.
Yeah,
and it's just unbelievable. They've allowed 25 fewer runs heading into tonight as we record on Tuesday the 31st than the New York Mets, right? Everyone talks about the Mets and how great their pitching is. The Cubs have allowed 25 fewer runs than even the Mets.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And that was kind of the philosophy, that they didn't spend any high draft picks on, or at least first round picks on, starting pitchers. They haven't drafted any, they don't have any impact guys in the system. Most of their better pitching prospects are at the lower level, so those still further away. They just made a cognizant effort that they were going to draft position players and built their team the opposite of how the Mets did it, just due to the risk of injury, and there's less of a risk to have with position players because they're less likely to get hurt for a significant period of time than pitchers. And then I say that, and then Kyle Schwarber's out for the year, which was go figure. It's been unbelievable, though, what they've been able to do with the pitchers that they've acquired and mold them into the guys that they want. And certainly Jake Arrieta, Chris Bosio didn't gift Jake Arrieta the stuff that he has. He didn't all of a sudden turn him into a 97-mile-an-hour pitcher. However, he certainly helped change the way that Arrieta approached every start. And a lot of that's buy-in and the smarts of the pitcher himself.
Yep.
So I even look at some of the numbers that Arrieta has adjusted by this year as opposed to last year. I guess earlier in the year, last year he was throwing his slider at a higher percentage and wasn't maybe getting the results, so he started to throw the sinker a little bit more. He's just willing to adapt and willing to adjust. He's just so insane right now. If I were to think of things that are as insane as Jake Arrieta in a good way outside of baseball, I can maybe think of like five things that are just insane as Jake Arrieta. Like maybe like Portillo's is just insane, and day drinking on a patio, for example. Like the menage a trois scene in Seinfeld. These are like things just—
I'm not an orgy guy. I got to get all these oils and
all that stuff. Like, it's a short list of insane things that are nearly as insane as Jake Arrieta. And I'm just naming a few off the top of my head. It's just so fun to watch every single day. I don't know. And you have to give credit certainly to Bosio and the pitchers for the, like I said, the buy-in.
Do you ever get down on your knees and thank God that you have access to my dementia? I mean, that's amazing that you just brought up that scene. I love that scene.
Spring plutonium by accident.
Yeah.
I love that. By the way, speaking of Seinfeld, you know how JD makes like one Seinfeld?
Yes, which is one of the things I absolutely adore about Jim DeJesus.
And it's a lot of times they're like subtle things that not everyone would know. Did you hear what he said about Alex Wood yesterday?
I think I missed it. I don't remember.
So Alex Wood was pitching, and he's got a kind of an awkward delivery. He kind of awkwardly like cocks the arm back, and it just doesn't look natural. It doesn't look graceful at all. And he goes, I feel like if Elaine from Seinfeld would pitch, this is what her delivery would look like.
That's amazing.
It was incredible. I was like dying. And I'm like, sure, a few people kind of got that.
The dance with the kicks. Oh, my God.
Seinfeld thing.
That's tremendous.
You're beyond stink.
That's amazing.
I know. I love it. Those are a few things. There's maybe a few Seinfeld episodes that are as insane as Jake Arrieta. But it's a very, very small volume of them.
Speaking of Jake Arrieta, Mr. Beto, Clayton Kershaw, who is having not only a better year than Arrieta, but is the best pitcher on the planet right now. When you look at his numbers, I don't even think it's really debatable. I mean, the guy's got 100 strikeouts and 5 walks. I mean, it's absurd to see what he's doing. Was asked about Jake Arrieta's impending free agency after next year, because it seems as that this story can't die until after next season when he either has a contract or doesn't. Was asked about what advice he might give to Jake Arrieta. And among other things, Clayton Kershaw said that if you're comfortable in a particular city, that you can always get a ton of money, but it's about playing or pitching, in his case, in a place where you will feel most comfortable, where you think it's the best situation for you, you have the best chance to win, you're most comfortable in that ballpark, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you and I have already discussed on this podcast, and it has been already discussed by Cub fans, I think, ad nauseum, and we're not even there yet in terms of a contract extension or not with Jake Arrieta. But I thought it was interesting what he said. Arrieta, we know, has said that he would not want to give the Cubs a hometown discount, which I don't blame him for. And obviously, if Arrieta continues to pitch like Bob Gibson reincarnate over the next 2 years, then he's going to demand a Kershaw-like contract. I thought it was interesting what Kershaw said. I wonder if it will make any difference to Arrieta at all, either when he gets to free agency or presumably when the Cubs and Arrieta's camp with Scott Boras decide to sit down, whatever that is, about a potential contract, and whether Arrieta might say to himself, I could go to X, Y, or Z city, get $250 million, and not be on a team that's equipped to win as much as the Cubs are, because this is sort of an interesting time in the Cubs' historical continuum in that they are now in a position where they are the destination for winning, where usually when we talked about the Cubs and free agency, the Cubs were not the team you would go to win. It was always the allure of trying to win there, but they weren't really a team built to win. When Jake Arrieta becomes a free agent, presumably, you know, after next season, the Cubs will still be a really good team with the arrow continuing to point up. So it just made me wonder, and I wanted your thoughts on this, whether you think that Jake Arrieta would take potentially any less money to remain here, knowing that he's going to be 32 no matter who he signs with in his next contract, and knowing that with this young nucleus of players that are right now on pace to win 115 games, that he might not be able to do better than this.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to a few things. He has to say that no hometown discount. That's wise on his part. When Strasburg signed that deal, he was probably like, dude, brah, what are you doing me like that for? You know, with Strasburg taking probably less than what he could have maybe garnered on the open market.
Do you think he calls people brah? I don't know.
I don't know. I could see him saying bro. More, he'd be more of a bro than a bro.
I think he'd be more of a bro than a brah.
He's more of a BRO than a BRUH.
Right, because I feel like Steven Strasburg, isn't he a California kid? Isn't he from San Diego? Like, I could totally see a brah from him.
Yeah, he could do a brah for sure. Yeah, Arrieta, yeah, I think he's more of an I think bro is more intimidating. Bruh is more laid back, correct?
Right, I think so, yeah.
Good vernacular.
I mean, if you're looking for commentary of what is in style from me, you've come to the wrong place.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I don't even know who we're talking about between the two of us, or what we're talking about. Everyone's rolling their eyes listening right now.
Right.
I think it's going to come down to the Cubs will probably offer somewhere similar, and maybe it'll be a little bit less. It depends on what is, you know, he's got a family, and if they're comfortable living here and it's just a few million dollars less, I mean, maybe it just depends on what's most important to him. If he wants to get top dollar and set some record, then maybe he'll do that. If he's just comfortable in the city of Chicago, and maybe if the Cubs haven't won a World Series yet, he wants to stay here to see if he can be a part of that team. I think a lot could happen between now and the end of 2017. I don't know. We'll see. Otherwise, you're right, though. It's kind of funny how everyone talks about, you know, that now it's a destination for winning as opposed to, you know, oh, of course he's going to want to come here. It's the Cubs. And we could build an all-star team of former Cubs, the guys that everyone said the Cubs were going to sign or trade for. That never really happened because the team wasn't built to win. And now that they have with guys like Lester and things like that, I'm still refreshing Twitter every 5 seconds to see if the Cubs have traded for Brian Roberts yet. I'm still waiting for that to happen.
Remember Carlos Beltran was somebody that they were allegedly going to go after.
Rafael is on his way. He's boarding a plane to Chicago, right?
Right. Gosh, Rafael Furcal, good memory. I forgot about that.
Guys like that. Todd Hundley was a guy that actually did become a Cub after everyone said.
You know, with that kind of memory.
That's Andy, and then he came and he was just god-awful.
Yeah, so that kind of memory, you should really do a Cubs podcast, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I wish I could think of other guys that kind of fit that bill. I feel like the next possible guy could be an Andrew Miller. I feel like we've gotten Andrew Miller about 50 times, and it's going to heighten.
Do you think that's happening? I mean, Jed Hoyer said last week on Mullion Hanley in the morning that he believes, or not that he believes, that he anticipates that the Cubs are going to add pitching and that they are never done looking for pitching. And they're always going to be looking for pitching, whether it's starting pitchers or relievers. Now, I tend to believe that they're probably going to add another reliever. I was doing a radio show today in Des Moines with my friends Marty and Miller, and they were asking me about, you know, if there's any sort of perceived weakness on the Cubs, what would it be? And I said, you know, I don't think that there really is one right now. And then they said, well, what about, you know, is Hector Rondon really a great closer? And I said, well, I just think that the reason why people don't consider him one is because the Cubs are blowing everybody out. They never use the guy in a save situation. He's only got 9 saves as we record on Tuesday the 31st, and he hasn't pitched in that many high leverage opportunities. Yep. But every time you watch the guy pitch, I think he's nasty. I think he could totally be that guy. And I think it's great and it's smart that the Cubs have not invested heavily in a closer, because you've seen around baseball how spending a lot of money on a closer can be a total disaster. But that all being said, Andrew Miller, I think, would make a lot of sense for this team. Or, you know, even Aroldis Chapman. I know that he's he's a free agent and it's a rental player, but if you didn't give up a lot for him, if the Yankees were willing to move him, which it seems like they might be willing to do, assuming that Boston continues to play the way that it has, and the Yankees, and if we're being realistic, the Yankees are just not good enough. They're not better than Baltimore. I don't think they're better than Toronto. So I think that if the Yankees decide to trade any of these guys, I mean, as bad as the Yankees are, if you don't score in the first six innings against the Yankees, you're not beating them. With Miller, Betances, and Chapman at the end of the bullpen, the game is over. And if there's one perceived area where the Cubs maybe could use a guy, I mean, think about how much better this bullpen would be if you went Strope, Miller, and Rondon, or some combination of the three at the end of the game. I mean, I know that this is like first world problems, and, you know, we're trying to add to a team that's playing, you know, 7-14 baseball right now, but I think that they could probably use a guy like that, and they're fortunate to have a lot of pieces that would be attractive to the Yankees.
No, I think the Yankees, first of all, I think their struggles because of the polyester uniforms. I had to make enough Seinfeld reference.
Yes, I heard that George was driving the World Series trophy to the parking lot.
Danny Tartable.
That guy gave me the finger.
Exactly. The Yankees are starting to play a little bit better. I don't think the Red Sox are probably going to. They're not going to probably catch them. I mean, you never know. Maybe they could compete for a wild card spot. Still, even if they were, it wouldn't probably make sense for the Yankees to think about moving one of those three guys to add into a different area of strength where they're currently pretty weak. They haven't been hitting the ball well at all, and their hitters are really, really aging. I think Andrew Miller, and you can think of the idea of Andrew Miller as well as the player, is a perfect fit for the Cubs, the perfect add to this team, because I love Rondon. I talked about things as insane as Jake Arrieta. Hector Rondon's season to this point is one of those things that's insane.
He's
as Jake
outstanding.
Arrieta.
Yeah.
Overall numbers, I think I'm not worried about him at all. And nor Pedro Strop. I know he's had a couple of bad outings that have inflated an ERA a little bit. It's still not bad. I still trust him quite a bit. He's one of the better setup men in the league, I would say. However, after that, you never know. There's not as much depth there. Justin Grimm hasn't been as sharp as he was in the first half of last year. Travis Wood was really good yesterday. He's had some good outings. However, he has some outings where it's hard to trust him if he's not hitting the strike zone. Clayton Richards, kind of that, we will throw you in when we're down five runs or up five runs, or we just need to get one out from a left-handed hitter. They don't really have a ton in the minor leagues from a bring up a bullpen guy depth. I'm sure they have some fillers here and there. But a guy like Andrew Miller that can get out both lefties and righties, that can pitch in the seventh, eighth inning and complement a guy like Pedro Strop. Let's say Strop throws 2 days in a row. Maybe he's not available for the third day. I think that makes the bullpen a lot weaker. So I think adding to the depth of the back end of that bullpen should be the number one priority. And I'm sure that's what it is down the stretch. And I like Adam Warren too. I forgot about him. I know he struggled a little bit recently.
Giving up a couple of gopher balls. Yeah.
I think that guy like Andrew Miller, they've talked about Will Smith before he got hurt with the Brewers as another possible nice addition that's not going to cost you the farm.
Loved his work in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Great, great song. I love Will Smith. The sky in Chicago looked like Independence Day today. It made me think of Will Smith.
By the way, when he comes in from the bullpen, do they play Getting Jiggy With It? Because if they don't, I feel like that's a crime. Or the Fresh Prince song.
They play the theme song.
Fine. That's fine.
Either one of those two. I agree. Yeah. I think those two, that type of idea is where they're going to look to bench, potentially add. And it's interesting because the Cubs, for the first couple of years, Theo and Jed were there, they would kind of open trading season with selling. Feldman trade happened in June. I think another one happened.
That
happened July 4th, right? That was like before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And then you look at maybe the Garza trade. I can't remember something else. Or
Dan Heron happened in June.
That might have happened a little bit earlier.
Maybe.
Dan Heron. I think that was July 31st, right? But it'll be interesting to see if they kind of flip the script and look to get the trademark, be active in the trade market early enough, because this is a year in the National League where it's pretty determined which teams are going to have at least a chance to be in the hunt. So we talked about it at length and how top heavy it is in the National League. You have the Cubs, the Pirates, and probably the Cardinals, at least at some point, being close. Then you have the Mets and the Nationals. And then in the West, you have, you know, probably the Dodgers and the Giants. Those are the teams that are going to compete. So you're going to have a lot of sellers earlier on that I figured you normally might have. Maybe the Twins are going to be out of it. The Yankees might look to trade one of their relievers. There's going to be teams that are out of it early. So maybe they are looking already to potentially improve in an area where they feel like they could use somebody else.
What about Rich Hill? Bring him back.
Do they need – Rich Hill's been great.
I know. It's astonishing.
They scout everyone, first of all. I hate those reports. Oh, they scouted Rich Hill. Well, of course they did. They scout everyone.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, they scout everyone. Those reports are just people are just trying to make something out of nothing.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. But
– Nathan Eovaldi, too.
Right. From I saw that, but, I mean, I think that would be a good – that'd be a pretty nice pickup. I mean, good pitcher. Not great, but solid.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess he'd I think he'd be – I don't know which starting slot he would fit into. I don't know if he's better than any of the Cubs.
Yeah, better than any of them.
Yeah, I don't know if he is. Yeah, he's probably not. But, I mean, I guess you could use him as both a reliever and a starter like the original plan was with Adam Warren. I don't even know how you'd use him. I don't know how it fits exactly, but you know, I do think that the Cubs are going to add pitching. So, all right, now that we are – coming towards the end of this podcast, we do what we do every week, which is sweeping the nation. And by the nation, I mean us. We look ahead at the schedule for the upcoming week, and we predict what's going to happen. So, Brian Beto, we look at this week's schedule. As we record, they have 3 more games against the Dodgers. Then they have 3 more games against the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Fighting Mike Farrens. How do you believe that the Cubs will fare?
I've dug deep this week. We miss Arrieta. Diamondbacks aren't pitching well. I know Archie Bradley just came up. I think he'll face the Cubs later in the week. Shelby Miller's on the DL. We're at home. Wind's starting to howl up. Rizzo's heating back up. We're seeing good things from Jason Hayward. I'm guaranteeing 6-0 the rest of the week. We got Jake going tonight.
So this is going to be...
I thought about it, and shockingly enough, I'm going with an unbeaten week for the Cubs.
So you're saying a 12-game winning streak in total for the Chicago Cubs.
Exactly. I've done a lot of math. It's like Bill Hunting at work today on a dry erase board. I was throwing some crazy equations up there, like the janitor in Good Will Hunting. And I've come to the conclusion that the math says the Cubs will go 6-0.
I love your math. You were a math major at Bradley, were you not?
I started in that fashion, correct.
Right. So
3 levels of calculus, then some linear algebra. I'm good with the math.
You're much better at math than me.
The stats say 6-0 and 7-0 if you count Monday night.
Yes. Okay.
And we're editing this part out if Jake Arrieta loses his winning streak tonight. By the time we post this.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Fine. I am going to pick that the Cubs will win 2 of the next 3 against the Dodgers, and they are going to sweep the Arizona Diamondbacks. So
5-1. Which game are they going to lose? How do you see a loss on the schedule? I just can't find one.
I mean, it's because I think at some point they're going to lose. I mean, at some point they're going to lose. Hamill is supposed to pitch Saturday against Arizona. I don't know if he's going to pitch as of right now because we haven't heard yet.
Yeah, they're pretty coy about that, right?
So if he doesn't pitch, maybe that's the game they lose. But right now I'm sticking with 2 of the next 3 against the Dodgers, and then they sweep the Farrens out of town.
Mike Farrens. Oh, right. That's fantastic.
They're sweeping the Farrens out of town.
I love it. I love it. That's the biggest free agent acquisition the Diamondbacks had all year.
I know, and they're under 500. What's going on here?
Shelby, Mike Farren to the booth.
Right, and they're listen, they've had a disappointing year. I think I have to blame Farren.
Yeah, that is kind of on him. Not only that, but they add some more hideous uniforms to the already arsenal of hideous uniforms.
Well, Mike designed them, so, you know. That's obviously why they're bad. No, we obviously love Mike, and we were just kidding. But anyway, so
they call him. Baseball encyclopedia.
Indeed. The guy's incredible. So we need to mention that we are on Twitter. He is at Brian Beto. I am at Jordan Burnfield. We will be tweeting the link out to the podcast we do each and every week. You can follow us on iTunes. Subscribe to us. Search for the B-Squared Show. You will get it there, and you will be able to find it and listen to all of our insanity. And you can also follow us on Podomatic. You can subscribe there as well and find the new podcasts when they come up. And Beto, we have a Facebook page.
We do. Search for B-Squared. I think the tagline, I can't even edit the page name, is your source for all Cubs talk all the time. We'll post the link to that from every podcast. I did remember last week, believe it or not. So
we'll, you did. I was very proud of you.
Yeah, I know. I'm a college graduate, believe it or not.
Yes. By the way, one more prediction as we record this before we go. As we record right now, I feel terrible about this happening. The White Sox are losing 4-0. And
are they really? Yes. Shockingly enough, Seinfeld was on my TV. It's on my TV every single week, no matter when we do it. It's somehow on.
Yes. Well, of course. And I have the White Sox game on because I guess I'm a glutton for baseball punishment. And I'm watching this thing unfold for them and unravel for them. They're losing 4-0 right now. And that means if they cannot come back tonight, as we record, they will have lost 8 in a row. How many words will Hawk Harrelson say the rest of the week?
Dude, it's so hilarious. So I just opened up Twitter now, and the first tweet that pops up on my timeline is our buddy Sam Panionovich, whose tweet just says, Hawk can no longer add 2 and 2. So it's obviously something about Hawk and whatnot. I watched the game yesterday when the Sox, believe it or not, bunted with their three hitter.
I know. I didn't know what that was. That's for some
Sox show to dissect. However,
we should fill in on the Sox show for that one.
Neil Walker, who's a Cub killer.
I still cannot look at Neil Walker without thinking of those series in Pittsburgh.
I'm so jaded that I'm already thinking I cannot wait till he hits a game-winning home run against us in the NLCS this year.
Don't
think about it.
Beto, don't even say it. Seriously, I know. Don't even say it.
But anyway, he hits the go-ahead right after the Sox blow that scoring chance yesterday, and he leads off the bottom of that inning. I think it was the seventh or the sixth or whatever with a home run. And Hawk said, that ball hit in the left field. And then it was just silent for like 5 minutes. And I checked the volume to see if I muted the TV. And
I honestly feel bad for what's going on with them. I'm not one of these White Sox haters. I root for them to do well. I thought it was going to be awesome if the city had two first place baseball teams all year. But this is just, it's not going well. We empathize with you, White Sox fans. We've been there. We have been there many, many times. So, all right. Well, things are going well. We are both predicting lots of victories this week. And Brian, for the second consecutive week, has picked a undefeated week for the Chicago Cubs.
Have I picked it for every week, if I'm not mistaken, this season?
I think you have. You are nothing if not the beacon of positivity. All right. I'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one, bud.
All right. That is the B-Squared Podcast. Again, subscribe to us on Podomatic and on iTunes. We will talk to you after another undefeated Cubs week.